Expat Life.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me, so what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
That was the greatest love song ever written and the greatest pop song ever written. It was 2 minutes and 40 seconds of perfection in mono. Rest in peace, Brian Wilson. Right, greetings, xenophiles. On this day in 1381, English peasants revolted against the poll tax. So that's something similar happened to Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s. So it's proof that nothing is new under the sun. On this day in 1665, New Amsterdam was renamed New York and designated an English colony. 38 years ago today, exactly, President Reagan said,
"Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall."
And he did. Kind of. Today in 2015, exactly 10 years ago, Zimbabwe discarded its own currency. And it offered an exchange rate against the US dollar of 35 quadrillion Zimbabwean dollars. What? Happy birthday for yesterday to Liviu Papadima. Happy birthday for tomorrow for Michael Anderson. And finally, happy birthday for Sunday to my favourite brother, John Allison. Right, to business, our guest, George Williams. Now, George Williams, turns out he grew up on a farm. We'll find out more about that later. How are you coping with the heat?
Hi, Steve. Thanks a lot for inviting me along.
You're welcome.
Not coping too well. Year and a half in, and I'm still struggling. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, the first 30 years are the hardest, don't worry.
Yeah.
And we'll do the story in the usual four chapters, and we'll try and cram it into an hour as we do. But I'm going to start with the first question, the hardest question of the night, which is George G. Williams, who do you think you are?
Ooh, well, that's changed recently. My official name on my equity card is Spot On George.
Spot On George?
Yes, indeed.
you declined from calling yourself G-Spot then?
I had two options when I applied to equity. One was Spot On George, the other was Gorgeous George. And I was far too... Yeah, I was not going to go down the Gorgeous George.
I thought he was a wrestler or something.
He's a boxer, I think, isn't he?
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. But I chose Spot On George and I've stuck with it. And it's served me well for 34 years in the business now. So
right,
still going, hopefully.
And what that business is, we'll find out in a minute. Mm. Or at some point over the next 55 or so minutes. Shall we get cracking?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go. So the first part is the thing that we call the throwback.
Expat life.
Throwback.
Tell me about your childhood.
As the man said, tell me about your childhood.
Oh, right, my childhood. Born on a farm in a village called Tring in Hertfordshire.
Tring, such a cute name.
Yes. It's got a ring to it, isn't it?
As it just about.
Sorry. grew up in Hertfordshire, born 1968, sorry, giving away my age. Stuck around Hertfordshire all of my life, moved to various farms and various villages. Had a very sort of poor working class upbringing. Lots of time on our hands, mm-hmm. living on the farms, and lots of freedom, which was wonderful.
Did you treat the farm like your back garden?
I thought I owned it.
Right. You
know, when you're sort of 6, 7, 8, 10 years old, you know no better.
Right.
I thought we owned the farm.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't until we got thrown off that you realise you're not.
Just an employee of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But no, it was wonderful. I mean, you can't get those days back, you know, roaming across miles of fields and making camps wherever you want.
Right.
The freedom was amazing before you realised all the hardships that go behind having to live on a farm.
Yeah. Yeah. So can you watch Clarkson's farm without cringing?
I can't watch him without cringing.
Well, fair enough.
Sorry.
It seems to make a very hard work of what it is to be a farmer. I mean, what does he know? It's all for television, I'm sure, but still, it doesn't look like an easy life.
No, I mean, things have changed, obviously. Most farms now are golf courses. Stud farms. Not sure how many farms there are actually left in the UK.
Right.
But yeah. You know, I grew up as, I was herding cows. We lived on a dairy farm.
Right.
And I was herding cows from the age of sort of 6, 7, 8 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And that means getting up at 4 in the morning and yelling stupid things across a field to try and get them in.
And when you're only 7 or 8 years or whatever, that, you're not a very big, so that, is it not intimidating being surrounded by these massive great cows and making yourself be in charge of them?
Well, you kind of, you go with your dad, you know, my dad was a herdsman, so you just think, yeah, if he can do it, I can do it.
Right.
So I did it right up until the point when a cow squared up to me, and when they do that, that's when you learn who the men are. And then, you know, I'm there quivering and crying, and my dad's saying, pick up a stick and shout, make yourself big.
make yourself big like a cat, yeah.
Yeah, which it worked, I didn't get trampled, that's good.
Fair enough.
And I'm still here.
Evidently, yes. Good, yeah. It says in your notes here that you had an older brother, and it's chalk and cheese is the word you're... Is this because you were just very different characters or because you didn't actually get on?
A bit of both.
Don't have to answer that.
Bit of both. You know, you kind of reached that age. I think on the farm we were okay, and then we left at about when I was about 10, 11, and we went to the council estate, and suddenly you become different tribes. And because he was two, three years older than me, you know, he's the grown-up tribe.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly he went from kind of being best chums to being my worst adversary.
Ah.
And from there on, you know, our politics divided, our lives divided, and yeah, that's my brother.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you ended up on the council estate, yeah? What age was that?
I was about 11, I think.
About 11, so suddenly massive change.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you know, that's part of life though, isn't it? You go with the flow. Yeah, I didn't like it, didn't enjoy it at all, but still in the village.
Yeah. Did it feel like a proper old step down after living on a farm and thinking you were the landowner?
Not so much a step down, it's a step sideways because suddenly I had friends. When you live on a farm that's miles from anywhere...
That's true.
..you don't have friends.
Okay.
Suddenly I had a crowd of friends. Yeah. I thought, oh, this is okay. I could be a joker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could... Yeah, I got on with people, I made friends, but it's just a step sideways. But yeah, I was always looking to leave. You know, I was never much of a village boy.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you said this was about 11, just before you started like the high school, right?
Now,
how was it for you? Were you tolerating school? Did you enjoy it? I mean, apart from the fact that it was now maybe a social hub for you.
Yeah, high school. I went to the same high school as my brother, which was nice to start with. And then after a while, you get tired of each other and, you know, start denying that the other one exists.
Right.
But yeah, it was okay. I enjoyed it. When I was a child, I had a very, very busy brain, which nowadays would be called ADHD.
Right.
So when I was at school, I felt capable of doing everything, but yeah. I never applied myself to one thing.
To doing anything.
So I ended up frustrating all the teachers and my parents and myself and just kind of coasted through because I could easily.
Right. You see, now you just made me think of something. Because that sounds, it reminded me, a similar sort of words on my school reports. Maybe I had it too.
I think a lot of people in our generation probably did, and it just wasn't diagnosed. Yeah. There wasn't such a thing.
Yeah, it was just...
Yeah, no diagnosis, no treatment. Just here's a stick, go out and play in the street.
Just amuse a bit yourself. Chaotic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, watch out for the cars.
So what were you dreaming to be at that point? Were you thinking, I'm going to be a... I mean, you mentioned art was... When did you first pick up a pencil and realise you could draw with it?
Very early age, basically. When I was on the farm, I had a very busy brain. I had trouble growing up. They thought I was a little bit special. Mm-hmm. And the doctor told my parents to give me a roll of wallpaper to draw on.
Okay.
Which, you know, my dad was arty, my uncle was arty. Mm-hmm. My dad was a sign writer as well.
All right.
My uncle was a painter. Uh-huh. I used to draw on the back of rolls of blank wallpaper. Yeah. No end, whatever came into my mind because right. I had so much going on.
Yeah.
So from a very early age, and then my parents encouraged it, the school encouraged it because I had some talent. And luckily they let me do my thing. Mm-hmm. Through school, I realised I was an artist and I was probably only ever going to concentrate on art.
Right.
I just couldn't nail down anything else. Mm-hmm. I liked languages, I was good at maths, English. But, you know, I wasn't dreaming of a life in it.
So I'm thinking, because you revealed your age, I'm thinking that when you were sort of going through your formative years, you had on television people who were artists and entertainers. I'm thinking Tony Hart, for a start, and the one who we can't mention, Rolf Harris.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah.
Were you imagining something like that? Not necessarily Rob Harris, but I mean Tony Hart, for example.
Very much. Yeah, I mean, take heart and vision on. I sent drawings into them regularly. I had one on TV. I got a prize for that.
So you had your image pasted on the gallery?
I did, yeah. It was of the two Ronnies I drew.
Put the headphones on.
Researching, haven't you? Oh, wow.
This was the music they played when people would send, for example, Your Good Self, would send paintings and drawings in, and they'd stick them on the wall and sweep the camera past them with this music playing in the background.
So soothing, isn't it? Even now.
Left bank too.
Suddenly I'm 10 years old again. Yeah.
Yeah, watching your own drawing on the telly.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Sorry, I interrupted you there. So you imagined this is the kind of thing you were going to do, and that's pretty much... So were you good at sciences? Were you good at humanity? No, you were artist all the way through, right?
No, sorry. But, it was just art. I mean, I could do them all. I wasn't any good at science, of course I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I'd say maths and English I was good at. Design technology, right. That kind of stuff. Uh-huh. But sports was out the window. Forget about that.
Right.
Science, forget about that. Mm-hmm. So I just concentrated on art because it was easy. I basically breezed through school and didn't make much effort.
Yeah.
Got out the other side and managed to get into university somehow.
And we'll come on to that after we've had the first piece of music. It's already time, imagine that, to play your first bit. You picked some classic old stuff, some Frank Wilson. This is very, very, why did you pick this particular one?
Three reasons. Number one, it's just joyous. Mm-hmm. Number two, it reminds me of my youth when I was a scooter boy and I used to go to all Northern Soul gigs.
Yeah.
And number three, every time I see my wife, this pops in my head.
Right. Okay, it's going to pop in your head exactly right now.
Nothing left now. Do I love you? people gather around Radio Gorilla.
Expat life.
Money, money, money.
Welcome back, Expat Life, with George G. Williams. What does the G stand for, apart from George? I'll bet you the first one.
G stands for Graham, which is part of my first life.
Right. Okay.
I was originally christened Graham, and I hated it. So when I went to university, I managed to pick up the name George,
right,
which I preferred, and I changed it as soon as I left uni.
Right.
So, but I kept it for my parents, so it's George Graham Williams.
Okay, yeah. I see. All right, so what's this about Much Haddam?
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention. Yeah.
I forgot to ask you.
Forgot to mention, the most interesting village name in the world, Much Haddam, formerly Great Haddam, next to Little Haddam, home of the Bishop of London, also home of Chaz and Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Also home of Lewis Collins from The Professionals.
Oh, yeah.
Also, wow. Oh, yeah.
Was he Doyle or
now
Bodie?
Now I'm taking you back. It was a better looking one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. and who else was it home of? It was home of Henry Moore, of course. And we had the Henry Moore Foundation there. So all the fields around where I lived had huge sculptures in.
Right.
With sheep roaming through them.
Ah, roaming through them?
Yeah. Well, the big kind of loops and holes and things in the middle.
Okay.
I think that probably contributed to my artistic side for sure.
Right.
Oh, I forgot to mention Much Haddam because I do still love it and I do still miss the village.
Mm-hmm.
So big up to Much Haddam boys.
Right, there we go. Yeah. And what a cute name. So you did go to university, St Albans it was then, or then it was Leicester.
It was, yes, St Albans. I did my foundation in St Albans.
Uh-huh. What in? I mean, what?
Foundation in art and design.
Just art and design. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, back in those days, it's before we had specific courses.
Right. You
know, things were different back then when we had things like polytechnics and foundation courses as opposed to all these HNDs and universities mm-hmm. and specific courses. We didn't even have an illustration course back then, so it was just... I went from doing my foundation to doing a degree in graphic design.
Right.
And I was sure I was an illustrator, but you didn't have much choice, so.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
And then, so you did your, 3-4 years of that?
Well, the foundation's only 1 year.
Oh, okay.
And then I didn't get into Chelsea Art School after that. So I took a year out, stayed in St Albans. I was working in bars at that time, full-time,
mm-hmm.
for a year. And then I applied up to Leicester and got in and came here in, what, 88?
Right.
Yeah, 1988.
Yeah.
Bit of a leap forward, but yeah, I came here to do my graphic design degree.
Right, okay. And then it says here in your notes, you started designing T-shirts in a sweatshop. In a sweatshirt shop or a sweatshop?
No, sweatshop.
Was it really?
Definitely. Yeah, I'm in Leicester where it is the heart of the rag trade.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, there are many, many factories there just dedicated to the rag trade. Obviously, there's a huge Indian population there as well, and they brought over their skills and to the sweatshops.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a graphic designer there, designing T-shirts and, yeah, logos and things, as you do.
I probably bought some of your designs.
Probably. There was a stage back in whenever it was, the early 90s, when if ever you saw the word Giorgio across a sweatshirt on a market stall, chances are I probably designed it.
Right. Uh-huh.
And it was a rip-off.
Because...
of course.
Of course it was a rip-off, yeah. And then so after, from the sweatshop, then what happened?
Blimey, yeah, I told you I've got a few lives.
Yeah.
Okay, so... After the sweatshop, I left college. What did I do? I picked up my first caricature gig, working at an army base for about 150 quid. I thought, wow, that's good. So I like that.
Right.
And at about the same time, I was asked to become a doorman at the local nightclub. I was a little bit fitter back then.
doorman, that's the posh word for it. Bouncer.
Yeah, a posh word for security, bouncer, yeah.
You're not coming in, you've got the wrong training shoes on.
Yeah, very much. So I was a doorman at a nightclub for 6.5 years, a 1,000-capacity nightclub.
Which
that was
nightclub?
An experience.
Sorry? Where? Which nightclub were you? In Leicester?
In Leicester, yeah.
Right, which one?
It was called, it was Mosquito Coast when I was there.
And then
it got changed to Mosh. In keeping with the crowd, yeah. Yeah, and at the same time, they found out I was a graphic designer, so I became the promoter there. So I was designing all the menus and all the flyers and all the publicity.
Posters, right,
I was also promoting the live band, so I went on to promote world music, ska, all sorts of live acts,
right.
Anyone from James Taylor Quartet to Gil Scott Heron,
right.
That kind of thing. We obviously had the specials, and there were a lot of local ska bands over there, Selector and so on. Had a fun time doing that for 6.5 years,
mm-hmm.
And also used to promote a comedy club downstairs called right. Hecklers.
Oh, great name. What a great name for a comedy club.
Come on, yeah. again, great experience. You know, we need 20, 23, 24, 25. I was having a time of my life, mm-hmm. The most popular man in town.
Right. Yeah. And how did you end up on telly next to Paul O'Grady?
Well, yeah. 2005, I think, right. I got... Was it 2000? Yeah, 2005, I got a phone call. I'd just turned full-time caricaturist then. I'd left the nightclub about 2001.
Right.
And I was full-time caricaturist, and I got a phone call, just random phone calls. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
Luck happens.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, do you want to come on Paul O'Grady? I was like, do I? So, yeah, I went down to...
I'm not a dog.
it was ITV back in those days,
right.
I think he was on. Went down there and, met a bunch of stars. Terry Gillingham was there, I think, and... Jerry Hall?
Yeah. Right, okay.
Jerry Hall or Terry Hall? Which one was the one that was married to the millionaire?
Jerry Hall or Terry Hall? Well,
Which one wasn't in the special?
That's Terry Hall.
Yeah, okay, anyway. So I was on Paul O'Grady and doing a live show, drawing them on set.
Yeah.
And then following week, that sort of caught on, and I got a phone call from Des and Mel. And I came on their show, and I drew Des O'Connor and Mel Sykes. And
right.
Coincidentally, Chaz and Dave, and a bunch of other people who I can't remember now. And they had me on their show twice. Round about the same time, I got a phone call from The One Show, and I went on
right.
there with Dom Littlewood.
Yeah.
And drew a bunch of people. I was on The Money Show. I drew Tony Blair on The Money Show. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I've met a few PMs now, funnily enough.
Right. And you've drawn them all.
Yeah. It all gets a bit confusing now because it's a very good time between sort of 2005, 2010,
mm-hmm.
work-wise. Anyway,
right.
personal life-wise, I met my first wife, got married and very quickly divorced in that time.
Right.
But I was on the crest of a wave, basically.
How did you manage to get yourself, I suppose it was, you gave Brad Pitt a drawing?
For
his birthday party or what?
It was a random call again.
Yeah,
it's just about being in the right place and having the right coverage.
Uh-huh.
You know? I got a phone call from a guy saying I'd like a birthday surprise for an A-list celebrity. Are you interested?
Right.
Give us a price.
I was like, depends on how.
Give me a price.
Depends who it is.
Exactly. And I kind of went, okay, I'm going to aim high, and I got a really high price. And he said, okay, it's Brad Pitt. He's on the set of Fury at the moment, and he's turning 50.
Mm-hmm.
The crew won the game drawn.
Right.
So I went down to Hemel Hempstead, where it was being filmed, around there in Muddy Fields. And, I drew a bunch of the crew. I drew Brad Pitt. I met him briefly. I wasn't allowed to tell him who I was because it was a surprise.
Oh, right.
So I just said hello, shook hands, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
What a fantastic time. And sorry, I've got a tiny anecdote.
Go on.
I was there on the set of Fury, and I'm thinking, wow, this is wonderful. I rang my friend JP, who's also a caricaturist.
Right.
I said, JP, guess what? I'm drawing Brad Pitt on the set of Fury. And he said, nah, that's nothing, mate. I'm drawing Johnny Depp on the set of Mordecai. They were both in the UK making films at the same time. And if we could have had a high five over the phone, we would have.
Yeah.
It was just brilliant. And then the very next, we were on a high, both of us. And then the very next day, I was working a working men's club where they were throwing empty bottles at me, telling me I was rubbish.
Lovely. I know you mentioned working a working men's club because there's an entertainment string to your bow as well, right? Not just you. I mean, you wouldn't go to, would you just go to a working men's club and sit on a stage and draw people? There's more to it than that, right?
Yeah, no. Okay, so the caricature art, the whole art of it is to walk into a room full of 300 strangers with a pad in your hand and entertain them. So you've got 3 minutes a person, you walk around, you tap them on the shoulder, you stare at them, you do whatever you want, you give them abuse. And if they volunteer, you draw them. If they don't volunteer, you don't draw them.
Uh-huh.
You're not aiming for a fight.
Right.
So you just draw the ones who are volunteers and suddenly you've got a massive crowd.
Yeah.
And over 34 years, I went from being a shy cartoonist in the corner, uh-huh. taking his art very seriously.
Right.
To an entertainer who preferred making people laugh,
yeah.
basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that became my living.
Right.
And here I am.
Yeah.
Still trying.
And what were you doing following the Olympic flame?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, just pure luck. I got a phone call from Samsung. So we need a team of artists to go around the UK.
Mm-hmm.
68 venues or something in 71 days. You're all going to be drawing on Samsung Galaxies.
Of course.
Tiny phones.
It'd be great if you show up with an iPhone.
Not on brand. We wish we had. Honestly, the Galaxy was terrible. So I put together, because I knew all the caricaturists in the UK, and I put together a whole roster for every single event around the UK. And we followed them. We made the best job we could on the Galaxy. And yeah, very proud moments. Yeah, very proud. So yeah, it's good. A good decade, really.
Yeah. Cool. Time again for the second piece of music already. Now, was one of the bands you were promoting The Cult?
No. The Cult is basically just to motivate me.
Yeah.
Before I go into a gig, I'm sat in the car. I've got 300 people in a hall somewhere having a dinner,
yeah.
And I'm in the car with this playing.
Right.
Now, if you enter with that music behind you,
oh, yeah.
You cannot lose.
Correct. Because the way it comes, it fades in quite slowly with these kind of Indian sitar sounds. And then the drum goes like this. As always, if you listen to the podcast version of this, you get the whole song. You know what's going to happen next, don't you?
Prin joi înșine, o zi întreagă de muzică 100% românească, 100% organică și 100% proaspătă pentru tine și cei dragi, livrată de Carrefour Bio la Radio Guerilla. Carrefour Bio, plăcerea de a mânca sănătos în fiecare zi.
Dulce Românie, 40 de hoți care se luptă pe-o felie, ciobani ca Miorița, pseudopatrioți.
Vine Alibaba și le ia oile la toți.
O zicem cu mândrie să se știe lumea toată, pasărea de noapte, ce specie protejată. Bravo Românico, cel mai șmecher brand de țară, trăiască videovorba, niciodată să nu moară. Capul ce se pleacă, baloșul nu-l taie, dar cu umilință lanțul în covoaie. Unde ești tu, țepești, doamne? de casă ei pe toți. S-o punem de ușa urmă cu sos de mafioți. Aici are dreptate cine urlă cel mai tare. E locul care caie, care porci în spinare. E țara care nicio umilință nu mai doare. Așa e când stomacul ți-e lipit de spinare. Coperta face carte și haina-l face pe om. La mână ai un Rolex și sub unghii cer lozion. E țara care cine poate fură azi un ou. Mâine fură găina și parchează ca un bou. La stânga sau la dreapta, depinde unde-i șoapta. La stânga sau la dreapta, depinde cum e șoapta. La stânga sau la dreapta, depinde unde-i șoapta. Ce-ți doresc că ție e dulce Românie. Să nu mai fii subiect de nazoție, dă-mi-o mie. Vândută de ai țării, dragi conducători. Ți-au îngropat cu totul și vin la mormânt cu flori. Din credincios române, dă și tu un ban sărmane. Să poată bra fericitul să se lăfăie în merțane. Când de nimic nu-ți pasă, doar să-ți umpli burdihanul. Iisus e doar pe buze, dar în inimă-i satanul.
Prin Joi Înșine, o zi întreagă de muzică 100% românească, 100% organică și 100% proaspătă pentru tine și cei dragi, livrată de Carrefour Bio la Radio Guerilla. Carrefour Bio, plăcerea de a mânca sănătos în fiecare zi.
Expat Life, powered by those beautiful people at Radio Guerilla.
Expat Life.
Chaotic, exotic,
exotic.
And we're back, Expat Life with George G. Williams. Now, Amanda Holden, does she look that good close up? Or is is it better at a distance?
She's much smaller close up, yes. Right. Yeah, it was an experience. I was called to draw at her hen party.
Right.
In a tiny hotel bedroom in Norfolk somewhere with about another 10 actresses that she was working with at the time on the, was it the cutting room or something?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Hairdressers. Yeah. Drama she was on at the time.
So you found yourself in a hotel bedroom with Amanda Holden and 10 actresses.
I did.
You jammy sod.
And they were in pyjamas. And yes, I do have photos.
Yes, I know you won't show them to me.
No, no. So it doesn't work on radio, does it?
No.
Anyway, yeah, sorry, another highlight. There
right.
You go.
There we go. Yeah. And what we forgot to just mention earlier was you've been all over the bloody world.
Only with my work, mostly. Yeah? Yeah. No, I...
So how do you get to... Who invites you to Bahrain and Qatar to draw caricatures?
Oil companies, right. Telephone companies, very rich sheikhs.
Right.
It's very popular over there, especially in the UAE. They like to provide very expensive foreign entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, I spent 2 months in Bahrain.
Right.
Just before the Arab Spring happened.
Uh-huh. Ooh.
Yes, literally. We were on our way out.
Yeah.
And F1, of course. I've worked a few F1s over there.
Oh, right.
So, yeah.
Who's the most famous person you've ever drawn?
Well, apart from Brad Pitt. Apart from Brad Pitt.
Maybe he is.
Oh, I drew... He's probably the most famous.
Right.
I mean, I drew Keir Starmer a short while ago on Peston on TV.
Uh-huh.
Drawn Jeremy Corbyn as well. You can tell him a Labour voter, can't you?
Yeah. Did Peston keep quiet long enough for you to draw him?
Yeah. Apart from that, no, those are probably the most famous ones, I guess. Yeah.
Has anybody that you drew been, let's say, less than impressed and annoyed by your caricature of them?
No one famous, no, but plenty of infamous ones, yeah.
Right.
Plenty, but as I say, you know, if you can't stand the heat, don't go in the kitchen.
That's fair enough, yeah.
But yeah, I've been all over, as you can see, Berlin, Paris, Zurich, Italy, Qatar,
mm-hmm.
Where else? Oh, Pordenone for Italy. I'm going back in September again,
all right.
Actually.
Yeah.
It's another guest artist thing over there, that
right.
Convention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at a point now, this part of the story, this is the part of the story where we bring you to Romania.
Mm.
And but was this, you came here again with work? Someone invited you to come and draw?
Well, it's a lovely, lovely story. Yeah, I was invited over here by another artist to come to a convention in Buzo. Never heard of it.
Right.
And I was like, why would I go there? Ah, it's Dracula's castle. Really? Okay. Well, you're close enough.
Yeah, okay.
And I said, I'll tell you what, I'm a massive fan of Dracula. If you give me a tour of Bran Castle, I'll come to your convention.
Right.
So they paid me as well. And so they flew me over. And my friend over here didn't speak English. So he basically asked for an interpreter.
Right.
And this young lady stepped forward called Danielle and said, yeah, I'll come over. I'll meet him at the airport and I'll be his interpreter for a few days.
Yeah.
Which he did. Was that 2022, I think?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I came over here for a few days, met Daniela at the airport, fell in love with her.
Was it instantly like that?
Oh, Simon Bates, that's a memory I don't want. Yes, it was. Honestly, I met her at the airport and it was as if we'd known each other forever.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful time, agreed to meet up again, and we had our first date in Vienna at another convention a couple of weeks later. And, yeah, within a year, I was back in Bucharest to marry Daniela.
What a coincidence. I met my wife at the airport as I landed here for the first time, and 15 months later, there we were married.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't look back. No, it's been brilliant. Unfortunately, it was impossible to stay in the UK with Brexit and everything happening.
God, because the UK's like falling to bits, man.
Yeah. To be honest, it wasn't worth staying at the time. So we thought, make a new life over here.
Mm-hmm. So you just up sticks and said, that's it?
Yeah, I basically sold everything I owned, packed everything else in the back of a trailer in my car, along with my two dogs. Couldn't fly them over because they're both Sharpeys and they have snub noses.
Right.
So we had to drive across Europe, five countries, with two dogs in the back of the car. Took 4 or 5 days.
Right.
And, that was an adventure.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And so you settled up straight into Bucharest, didn't think to go anywhere else, just straight into Bucharest, right?
I stayed over my friends in Codlia.
Oh, okay.
So just spent a night there and then cruised in on my own. Yeah.
And then what? So you came here and thought, well, I can draw any, as long as all I need is a pad and pencil, I can do this job from anywhere.
I did. Do you know, I was flying high and I thought, by the time I get here, easy. I'm just going to pick up the pad, go out there, do what I do.
Right.
In the meantime, I forgot to mention, a couple of years ago, I went viral on Instagram with my photos, all the live drawings. And I've now got 160,000 followers and I'm now officially an influencer, whatever
officially
that means.
Officially an influencer. Well, what, you say whatever that means. I was about to say, what actually does that mean? I mean, is it just like, okay, you've got 150,000 followers, therefore you are by default a de facto influencer, or do you have to actively do some influencing?
No, you are defined as an influencer. Anything over 50,000. 50,000 is a mini influencer.
Right.
And then it goes to influencer and bigger. I don't know. I don't know the scale.
But right.
I'm kind of low down on it.
Okay.
You're supposed to sell advertising, basically.
Right.
So people come to you and say, hey, would you sell this lovely watch, put adverts on your site, and we'll pay you money. But I've got more integrity than that, and I don't think any of my fans really want to see makeup tips or anything irrelevant. Right. And so far, I've had no relevant offers because caricaturing isn't big amongst most people. It's not a big market.
Yeah, fair enough. I understand. If you're buying Mercedes, you might be a part of the target market for a Rolex. But yeah.
But looking at silly faces, who's going to look there and think, oh, yes, I could do with that dream house in Corfu? What?
Yeah. So this is what you do now. You basically draw still and entertain. Any dreams to sort of go back on telly over here? Have you done it?
Not yet, no. The last year, to be honest, we've just been surviving and I've been teaching English at a big high school.
Right.
Just finishing up there this week and looking for a new contract if anyone wants an English teacher out there.
Right, listen up. Yes.
But yeah, I've been doing that and building the business over here. It's okay. We're doing well. We're on the top first page of Google. We have inquiries, we have bookings, and hopefully within the next 6 to 8 months, we should be full-time again.
Okay.
Hopefully.
So I'll put some links to your various socials up on when I post the podcast up on the site. But for people who are interested to see what you do and how you draw and how do we find you?
Well, the website is quite simple. The Romanian one is spot-on.ro.
Simple enough.
Yeah, just go to that.
Or it's not your T-shirt.
It is. It's all over. Look at this for branding.
Yeah.
Or you could just look up Spot On George anywhere. That's my tag.
Okay.
That's my Instagram tag. It's everything, Facebook, LinkedIn. And you can see exactly what I do and how I entertain.
Right. Very good. Very good. Yeah. Now, it's already time for some Prodigy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, quite,
more motivation.
It's like, yeah. Do I need to ask why you picked Firestarter?
Put this on and you get the job done quickly, honestly.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that...
be careful. I'd love working to this.
Be careful
love
driving to when you listen to it, because you get speeding fines. Been there.
Yeah.
So we'll have a minute or two of Firestarter and then we'll come back and close up the story. Let's go. Commercial break starter.
Expat Life, made in Bucharest, Romania.
Heard all over the world.
Expat Life.
Next chapter.
This is it. Next chapter, last chapter of the show. Now then, so basically this is what you're going to do next.
I'm just going to keep on building the business.
Yeah.
Hopefully become successful, become rich, retire somewhere in the mountains.
House in the mountains, the classic old buy a house up the mountains.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, somewhere up near Branka. No, so somewhere near Brasov.
Right.
Obviously, it's beautiful around there. But yeah, just probably sell up the property in the UK now. It's just not worth having over there anymore. And yeah. Settle down, have children at the ripe old age of whatever I am now, 57.
Well, okay.
57.
Are you? Yeah.
I lose count, you know. Once you get past the 50, you stop counting, don't you? Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much my plan, I guess. So, yeah, if you're looking for anyone to entertain at your wedding and dazzle your guests, then drop us a line, give us a ring.
Right.
And I draw along with my wife. We both draw at the weddings and events. So we've got it cornered.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, very nice. So you can get his and hers drawings done by him and her.
Well, we have the friendly, cute ones from my wife and we have the ones with the big noses from me. Both go down equally well.
Yeah, okay. So, how do people... get in touch with you?
It's Spot On George, Spot On Caricaturi, and spot-on.ro is the website. Thank you all.
Right, there we go. Good. Maybe when this is all, you know, you've settled in a bit longer and you become the superstar that you deserve to be, you come back on and tell us how it's going.
I want to come back on every week. I've got a new story for every week.
You have? Oh, excellent. Oh, I'll remember that because come in handy to know. It's time to go. I'm going to see you anyway on Saturday at the Dubliner.
Yeah, yeah. Will nice get there? Together for the Brits in Bucharest get together club. Yeah.
So if you want to see what George G looks like.
And I'm going to have my pad with me. So come down to Dublin and I'll draw you. Yeah. I bought my pad tonight as well. So I'm going to draw you in a minute, Steve. Okay.
I was wondering if you were going to... I thought you might do that while we're on the air, but let's see.
I didn't want to fall out just yet.
Okay. So let's... it's time to go. And your final piece of music, some Gary Numan. I was so pleased when I saw you listed this one as well. And cars.
Yeah, what can I say? Powerful piece. Again, takes me back so many years to my youth. Still listen to it regularly, pretty much every day.
And it's as simple as that.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was the lead single from, I think, his second, his third album, but his second electronic one.
Oh, was it? I don't know.
The Pleasure Principle or the... Yeah. But that sound. Unmistakable sound. You know what's coming.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got to get out of here because the Uman Real crew are waiting outside and we better
let them in. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming. And yeah, I'm sure we scratched the surface and we could tell more stories.
Definitely, yeah.
Let's go with Gary Newman and Cass. Thank you, George. This has been Expat Life.
Thank you.
Again to this and previous shows, find us at expatlife.ro.
Expat Life.
You mobs, please.
Good night, everybody.
Pentru limba română, apasă 1.